On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Deepak Jose. He is a data analytics and AI expert. He's worked at companies such as Coca-Cola, ABB, Asurion. Currently, he's at Mars. We're going to be talking about supercharging decisions by leveraging data and analytics. You know, really bringing that value-first mindset, understanding why we should not be approaching this technology first. And Deepak has a lot of experience in the CPG space, so he's going to draw on a lot of those examples and stories. I'm super excited to have you on the show. So thanks for taking the time.
Amir, thank you for the invitation. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
Awesome, man. So, you know, obviously, I love the idea of supercharging decisions, right? So I think supercharging decisions and running super fast in a direction are always the fear, because as technologists, we all want to dive into the technology and start typically over-engineering solutions. And, you know, you can't blame us. That's what's fun. When you look at this and you're talking about leveraging data and analytics, obviously business outcomes, business value comes first. How do you stay centered in making sure your first focus is on that value and the business outcome and kind of restrain that technology side of your brain?
So let me start with my experience working in several organizations. So traditionally, we have a pyramid approach where in large organization, we would start by building a huge data foundation. Say almost 10 years back, we used to build data warehouses. Say 5 to 10 years back, we started building data lakes. And these days we have architectures that are called lake houses, but we would build a solid data foundation. Building on top of the data foundation, you can leverage that data to generate knowledge and insights. And building on that insights, you can take some action, which will generate a small value. That is a traditional pyramid of data to decision-making journey exists. Now, in my recent roles, one thing, including Mars, what I have learned is that we need to invert that pyramid. So instead of starting with data, we need to start with the question, what are the key business problems that we want to solve? To solve those business problems, what is the value that we are going to get? And that can be used to prioritize the business problems. Now, once you have clarity on the value, you can understand what are the actions the organization needs to take to generate those actions. What is the knowledge and insights that you need? And for that, what is the data that you need to have? So instead of having a data first mindset, my philosophy in data and analytics, let us have a value first mindset and a data second mindset. And value in this case stands for business problem or a decision back approach. Now, the reason why I tell this, in large organizations, what we have seen, I mean, a data lake would have petabytes and petabytes of data. And there many organizations generally incentivize ingesting the data through APIs and whatnot. And one thing that we have realized is that over a period of time, in many cases, 70 to 80% of the data is either touched only once or remains untouched. Now, that needs to change. So to do that, you need to have a business problem or outcome first kind of mindset.
And let's kind of dive into that. When you're looking at the business side and you are trying to generate that business outcome, right? That value first, obviously they don't really care the technology you use, right? When you're mapping this out in your head, and I mean, it all happens, you know, first you're listening to them and you're starting to build in your mind what you think the solution is going to be. How can I solve this problem? How far should you take a solution, right? So if you want to provide most value, you could produce whatever this is and give it to them and they go use it. They're done. You could also build the same thing and go, well, if they want something in the future, I can also make sure that's a little bit more scalable, flexible, and semi-over-engineered. Or you can go, hey, I'm going to build this to be the most robust thing and I'm going to make sure it's super supportable for the next 5 years. And obviously, that could be a mistake. When you're approaching delivering the solution as a technologist, how far and how much flexibility should you start planning for?
Flexibility is the most important aspect of it. Now, I think this is a wonderful question. But now I'm going to answer you with a story. Okay. Now, this is one of the fun stories that I heard from somebody who innovates quite a bit. So this story is about a bridge in Central America, the Central American country called Honduras. Okay. Honduras as a country is known for several natural disasters. There are earthquakes, floods, and whatnot. Now, in the 1930s, the U.S. government collaborated with the Honduran government to build a bridge to withstand the flooding and hurricanes, and that bridge was built to last. Now, this bridge is called the Choluteca Bridge. That bridge became one of the popular tourist destinations. Now, do you know what happened? Several years later, another hurricane hit the country. It's called Hurricane Mitch. Do you know what happened? Because of the hurricane and the intensive flooding that happened, the river changed its course. And now you have a bridge with no water under the bridge. Now, I use this analogy quite a bit to talk about the importance of building to adapt than building to last. Now, as a civilization, we went through this pandemic a few years back. For a CPG company like us, it had a huge impact. Our consumer preferences and their channels of shopping completely changed. If you have never bought something online, you have started buying online something. So I'm just giving you as an example. Now, if I had built a data engineering architecture in such a way that I cannot ingest a new channel data, then we had to reinvent all of the capabilities immediately because e-commerce as a channel was growing significantly in the last 3 to 4 years, right? So my point here is, if you want to truly future-proof your business when there is a situation like a COVID pandemic, or if there is a new technology like Gen AI is there, the message that I have is you have to build your capabilities to adapt so that you can drive faster experimentation, you can drive better interconnectivity, and you need to have that agile mindset so that we can pivot yourself and leverage the latest technology available.
I love that. A great example, by the way. And I think to your point, when we're starting to think about those solutions, I think I interviewed once somebody and a guest, and they actually said they subscribe to the point of build it to throw it away. And I asked why. I go, that doesn't, you know, it's counter in the face of all the other engineers and leaders I've had on of build it to throw it away. And he said, build it, throw it away, because it's probably cheaper and faster to rebuild it than try to go back and fix something that we have to amend, if it's a larger scope. So he doesn't think about that planning. And when you look at something like Gen AI that's popped up on the radar in the last, it's 18 months, no real leader was thinking, well, I need to plan for an AI solution on top of whatever data or architecture I have. Something like that obviously is going to force you to re-examine a lot of the decisions made in the past. You have to go back and re-examine those decisions, hence why we call them technical debt. When you're looking at those decisions and you're thinking about solutions, we could have never really anticipated. I mean, people would tell you that, oh, I saw AI coming and I saw Gen AI, implemented in my organization. Okay, sure, but not at this speed. When you're looking at that and you're thinking about now knowing that maybe Gen AI is going to maybe play a bigger piece, how much do you start planning for that? Because maybe it doesn't. I mean, it could be ludicrous that it won't, but there's a chance that in 5 years, we look back and go, it was not in any shape how we envisioned it. And it was nothing like what we thought, but yet we did a lot of planning now.
Yeah. So I think we have to be quite agile and adaptable for a situation like Gen AI. So the way I think about Gen AI specifically, I am prioritizing the activities that I want to do for Gen AI is based on a simple framework. I mean, where one of the factors that we are considering is the value that we can generate. And another factor that we are considering is the ease of implementation. Now, I'm broadly dividing the initiatives into three buckets. Do things simpler, do things better and do better things. Okay, three buckets. So what does do things simpler mean? So that is where there are a lot of mundane, repeatable tasks which we end up doing day in, day out. That needs to change. There is an automation engine that you can leverage. A lot of repeatable tasks can be completely automated. And I think we are saving everybody a lot of time and energy by automating mundane tasks. So do things simpler. Do things better is the area of leveraging a large language model for something like a search and summarization, a knowledge answering, or a RAG feature, or a conversational AI, etc., etc. This is where you are going to get more value, but the implementation is slightly more complex. And finally, do better things. This is when you can think about how can you completely transform the way you are doing the business. How can you completely transform? The way I think about it, so think about a new product innovation, understanding the trends in the industry, understanding our internal sensory data, and defining a new brand. So that could be an example of, from a futuristic standpoint, innovation. So do better things. So that's how I think about it. So when it comes to identifying use cases and prioritizing, that is where large organizations should spend a lot of energy. The second broader themes that I would say, when it comes to execution, how do you think about GenAI? So if you're working in a large organization, I think I have a three-pointer for you to consider when you are building a solution. The first thing is on the point that we discussed in the earlier first question in your interview. You need to always have a business problem first mindset. You should not start with, hey, it should not be a technology going in search of solving a problem. It should be a business problem and using the right technology. So I think that is the first point. The second thing, we talked about technical debt when it comes to data and data foundation. I think that is going to be really, really important. That is very important when it comes to implementing. I heard this phrase from called 10-20-70 principle. A 10% of value creation might come from the actual kind of LLM that you are going to use. 20% is always depend on what is the quality of the data. And the third 70% is going to be on the culture and the people. Which brings to my third point. So third point is on the people and culture. Now, if you are work for a large organization, my team generally tells this joke that, like, hey, sometimes we internally align on things for 6 months to do 6 weeks of work. So how can you build an empowering team who can take faster decisions? I think that is going to be really, really important. If that is the only way you will be able to adapt. And to adapt, large organization which has been there for 100 years or so, right? Like, you have to think about training and upskilling. You have to think about change management. And what I've always learned in my data and analytics career is that if you are investing $1 in building an AI tool, if you can spend additional $1 in training and upskilling of the associates to improve the process, you are going to have exponential return. So again, this was a long-winded answer on GenAI, but I think we need to stick to our first principles.
No, I actually love that. I appreciate diving in and giving us the context. And so let's actually look at that, right? So you have a lot of experience in CPG. Consumer packaged goods. Obviously, lots of data. You've worked at some very large companies that have been around for 100+ years. Like you have worked at some great companies. When you're looking at the business outcome that companies would like to generate, they're seeing, they're hearing the buzz, and you know deep down that there are data silos. There are decisions that have been made in the past before you got there or before you were involved for how the data should be structured. Here comes a new technology and business leaders can see there's a lot of value to generate But also, they might have to look at a different way of getting there or a different investment level, because all of a sudden to have that connected data ecosystem to drive these solutions isn't the, hey, this value, while it's there, it's also going to take a long time potentially, and it's going to be expensive. So when you have to balance those requirements, knowing, let's say, within the industry you've worked in, CPG, how do you have that conversation? Because I'm sure executives are hearing this and they're going, well, let's run with this. This is great. Gen AI will know what people are thinking, what people want. And then you have to say, well, we got to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. So I think one of the key themes that I would start with is, like, see, in any organizations, responsible usage of AI, that should be non-negotiable. So I think we have to use AI responsibly. So you need to have the right kind of governance in place. You need to think about how a potential black box solution can have quite detrimental effects when it comes to transparency, having biases. I mean, the responsible AI strategy is something you should think about. I think that is where, if you're talking to a board level or at a C-suite, that's where I would start with. What is your organization's responsible AI strategy? Now, once that is clearly defined, once you have a responsible AI strategy in place, you can use a framework like a DVF, desirability, viability, and feasibility. Now, obviously, you need to have that user-centric mindset and understand the desirability from the leaders or from the business or from different parts of the organization. And that desirability should come through areas like, I mean, you need to have a design thinking or a user-centricity workshop to understand what are the real needs.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that it is more important to understand the business problem right rather than building the solution right. Because you need to build a solution only for the right problem. So find that time when it comes to understanding desirability. Now, feasibility study is also going to be very important to just to make sure that financially it is feasible, technologically it is feasible, and finally it is the viability of it. Now, this is when you have to again think about building strategies like red teaming to make sure that the solutions does not fail when it comes to the viability of the solution. So having a DVF sort of a framework, which is there in the industry for a period of time, is something that you can use when it comes to prioritizing generative AI initiatives or AI initiatives in general.
And let me ask you this question as a follow-up. So as we're seeing, and I like the framework and I like how you kind of articulated balancing the needs and understanding, again, maybe it's an out-of-the-box solution that it gets you there. When you're looking at getting these solutions, right, to generate the highest business value, we need people to use them as intended. When you're looking at adoption and convincing people that, hey, listen, you know, working with this solution, even though you have 20 years experience doing this, it might give you the right guidance to help you get to decision faster, that adoption piece is going to be crucial. With these newer solutions, when it comes to adoption, I guess, what are your thoughts on helping people understand that these tools are there to support and help augment capabilities, not replace?
So, I mean, this is a fantastic question again. So, I think the idea of Copilot is very important when it comes to leveraging AI capabilities in general. Now, you need to think about in terms of principles, right? So, let's say, think about mutuality as a principle. Now, only a mutual benefit is going to stay longer. If the beneficiary is only AI, not the people, or if only people are getting benefit, neither the technology, then it is not going to. So how can you build technology solutions in such a way that it is mutual to people? That's going to be very important. The reason why I'm telling, we should not be in the business of building a solution that nobody uses. Now, if the solution is going to help people take a faster decision, it saves their time, and it is going to take manual task out, people are going to spend their time to upskill themselves to embrace the solution. Now, when it comes to execution of upskilling, or when it comes to execution of adoption, there are different persona-based tasks that you can do. Now, depending on various levels within the organization, say, for example, if you are a top 100 associates, you belong to the top 100 leaders of a large organization, there should be a specific persona-based training, say, for example, on AI, that is going to be needed. I'm not going to get into the details of how a model is built in that conversation. Now, that's one layer. Another thing could be persona-based training for a business owner for an AI solution. Yeah, or a product owner for an AI solution. Now, you need to go a little bit more into the detail in depending on the area. So if it is with the sales team, a marketing team, or a supply chain team, the kind of training that we will be focusing will be different. And the third thing that I would say is, like, you need to educate everybody on some basics. That is never going away. That basics, you can call it as like an AI for dummies, or like a GenAI 101 kind of course for the majority of the people or the association. Anyway, so that is the way I would think about when it comes to upskilling. Now, if you can have the best tool, if it is not being used, then it is a waste of energy. So I wouldn't recommend it for anybody.
I guess, the notion of a champion is very common within cybersecurity. They leverage that concept to promote those, you know, principles, rules, guidance to make sure people are following them. As you're kind of seeing us move forward with AI, and we're going to see co-pilots and more innovation happening, the concept of a champion at the, you know, data analytics AI level, how do you see that role? I mean, is that role coming to fruition? Is that going to be instrumental for people to have somebody at their level to help them with these tools? Because obviously self-service tools and data have always been the goal. We might see that.
So I think, Amit, the way I would think about it is, I think you don't need a separate AI champion. I think these are influencer roles that you have to get. Now, for example, within my current organization, some of the C-level executives are really, really excited about AI. I mean, whenever a new AI solution comes to the marketplace, I think they are equally getting excited compared to the data analytics or a tech team. And those are the biggest executive champions for us, as an example. So what I'm essentially trying to tell, that you don't have to redefine, you don't have to hire somebody as AI champion for this one or that one. I think those kind of responsibilities should naturally sit in within the business teams or within the execution teams, because we cannot at this point talk about a corporate role or a business role as mutually exclusive to the AI. There is an intersection, and I think my strong personal belief is that it is time for us to embrace AI and learn more about it and make the best out of it so that we have a strong co-pilot.
Well, I know we covered a lot of ground. I'm sure we could dive deeper and deeper and deeper. You've got to get back to your day job of running data and analytics, so I'm going to let you get back to it. I want to thank you for being on. If somebody wanted to follow up with you, just kind of ask you anything about, you know, something you mentioned on the show, what is a good way of touching base with you?
Absolutely. So please feel free to reach out to me through my LinkedIn. You can find me as Deepak Jose. And as my closing thought, Amir, I grew up in India, and one of my leaders that I was always inspired by was Mother Teresa. Like, so she once told this thing: not all of us can do great things, but all of us can do small things with great love. So my advice to everybody who is listening: you find that small thing that you love really well, you embrace it. Focus on it. And if it is AI, focus on that small part and do it with a lot of great love. You are going to hit the ball out of the park. Thank you.
Awesome, man. That is fantastic advice. Again, thanks for being on the show. And as always, two things. So this is a great show. I actually love the closing advice. I'm going to have to find that quote and put it on my wall because I think that's inspiration. I'm going to teach my little one to kind of follow that as well. But great episode, really talking about how to provide value through data analytics, especially with a focus on what we're going to be doing around AI adoption. So please share this with somebody else who might find it interesting. I think Deepak did a wonderful job. Reach out to him if you have any other questions. Please like, subscribe, comment, leave me a review. Let me know how the podcast is doing. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.